Support for Art Talks comes from the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com. And from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from Red Band Coffee Company, local roaster, offering individually prepared coffees, New Orleans-style iced coffee, and whole bean coffee at two locations in Davenport. Information is at redbandcoffee.com.
Well, hello again and welcome. You've tuned into a conversation between artists. For the next hour, we'll be exploring the mind and the creativity of our guest. This is Art Talks, and I'm your host, Bruce Carter. Well, hello again and welcome. Bill Stamatz is with us. Bill is a vice president of business development of a marketing and communication company called Stamatz Communication. He's on the board of the Cedar Rapids Art Museum. He's the chair of the Visual Arts Committee for the city of Cedar Rapids. And he's also a terrific artist, too. He has a BFA from Pratt in New York. We'll talk about that. An MA in design from Wisconsin at Madison. And most of all, he has a printmaking degree, an MFA degree from Iowa, my old grounds. He has a show up in Maquoketa, Iowa, right now at the Maquoketa Art Experience, 124 Main Street, right downtown, that runs till the end of this month, end of July. And here he is. And Bill, thanks for coming down. Welcome
Thank you.
To the show.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for having me on board.
Oh, terrific. My wife took a class with you, a really nice class. She thought you were a terrific teacher, and the work that everybody produced was great. And it was up in Maquoketa, and I walked around, and the work she did was marvelous. I just love what she did.
Well, we had a good time. It was a collage course and also assemblage, and she did a great assemblage piece. So.
Yeah, the circus thing. It was just, and it was like, well, gosh, what kind of artist is this guy? And so I looked you up, and marvelous. And your wife has a gallery, the Black Earth Gallery in Cedar Rapids. You and your wife?
That's right, yeah.
In the New Bohemia Arts District in the Cherry Building on the second floor, whatever
yes.
that means.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, oh, that's great. That's great. And so here you are. You're an art force. You're like a community arts advocate as well as being an artist yourself.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Difficult to balance then?
No, actually, I think it's invigorating to do all of that. And I think it's important for us to feel like we're in getting people involved, particularly in Cedar Rapids, in the arts.
Mm-hmm. Cedar Rapids is a good arts community?
It's not yet. It's becoming so, I think, and slowly so. But it's there have been really good patrons of the arts through the history of Cedar Rapids. But to get more people intrigued with the arts, I think, is important. We feel that with the flood of 2008, which really impacted Cedar Rapids, that the opportunity was presented itself to then really push the cultures of Cedar Rapids, push cultural events in Cedar Rapids, both music and visual arts.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're trying to take the helm as much as we can with the visual arts.
Good for you. I talked to a administrator in the state, and he said that whenever a flood or a hurricane or some major weather disaster happens to a city, it takes about 12 years for it to come back.
Yeah, it's taken about 5 years with a very aggressive city government and people who are working in the city to bring things around in a quick way.
Good.
So I think we've done a lot in a few short years.
Good. Well, Iowa's a wonderful place to live. So having the arts here is just a terrific bonus.
Absolutely. You know, there's a really good work ethic, of course, in Iowa. That really helps, I think, is why we've done so well getting things back on track in Cedar Rapids.
Good, good, good. Yeah. Well, good luck and continue with that. But let's talk about you and your work. You were an artist as a boy. This was something you...
No, I wasn't an artist as a boy, but I grew up with a father who was an avid art collector.
Ooh.
So he had his a little library, he called it, but nowadays we would call it a man cave. And so, and it was really chock full of art books.
Really?
So I used to wander in and just pull a book off the shelf and really just look at the pictures.
Nice. Did he mind you being an artist?
Not at all, actually. He really wanted me to be an artist. It was really interesting. You know, he thought that that sort of manifested that side of his personality, and he really wanted my brother to be more of the businessman. You know? So he was really great about really supporting me in my art endeavor.
And you went all the way to New York City for your undergrad.
Yeah, yeah.
What was Pratt like?
You know, the reason I went to Pratt was I went to prep school. So it wasn't like I was unfamiliar with the East Coast.
Where'd you go?
I went to Deerfield Academy in Massachusetts. And it was very much Dead Poets Society, ivy-covered buildings. I wore a coat and tie to class. And, you know, but it was very much reading, writing, arithmetic, and a lot of sports. So I finally discovered art my senior year, last semester. I took an art course and said, well, you know, why haven't I been doing this? I know stuff, you know. I've seen Picasso and everything in my dad's art library. So why wouldn't I do something along this line? So I went to school then on the West Coast to Lewis and Clark College for a year. And spent the time actually with a really good artist out there, a guy named Jack Portland. I think he changed his name, in Portland, Oregon. And but he was fabulous, and he helped me put a really good portfolio together, and I shopped it around to RISD and Pratt and decided to go to Pratt. Got into both, but decided to go to Pratt.
Why East Coast?
Well, it wasn't East Coast. It was New York City. And that was really, New York being the mecca of the art world, I wanted to be there.
How cool. It was self-directed.
Yeah.
Wow, interesting. And how was Pratt? How'd you find it?
Well, you know, I liked the grittiness of Pratt. It's at that time, it was not in a desirable neighborhood at all in Brooklyn. So you're down in Bed-Stuy, and it's a little scary. But you know what? I kind of liked all that. I liked the...
You're an art student.
I was an art student. You know, I was wandering in class with my portfolios, and there were gangs on the corners and things like that.
But you probably weren't carrying much cash or anything.
I had no cash.
No cash. That's part of the deal. What was your place like that you stayed in?
Well, I stayed in the dorms for a little bit, Willoughby Avenue, and that was fine. That was okay. And then I moved to Carroll Gardens and had a studio apartment in Carroll Gardens, which was wonderful.
Yeah, and you got to see all the shows and all the openings.
New York was like this big lab for art, and it was just wonderful. And when I was there, which was the early 80s, it was neo-expressionism was the hot thing. So Julian Schnabel and David Sally, Mary Boone Gallery, it was all about Mary Boone and Soho and everything that was happening down there. So it was really fun. I managed to pick up a part-time job at the New Museum of Contemporary Art, so I worked there, helped hang shows.
How cool.
Yeah, so I got to meet a few artists here and there.
Who'd you meet?
Michael Smith was one I met.
Really?
He had this installation piece, which was really kind of cool. It was a fallout shelter, and then he would take had chain-link fence as part of the display, this big installation. And so one of my jobs was to take Twinkies and stuff Twinkies in the chain link fence. And so I had to replace Twinkies on a weekly basis.
Job security.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's one of those art things. It's kind of a curious story. It was fun. It was really
fun. How interesting.
Yeah.
Who else did you meet?
Hannah Wilkie.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Gosh, what was that like?
She was bombastic, incredible.
A trip.
Yeah, she was a trip.
Wow,
yeah,
how fun. Yeah. Gosh, in New York. And so then you had to give all that up and come to the Midwest?
You know, I chose that. I said, okay, I've had enough in New York. Loved it while I was there. But I don't know, maybe it was my Midwest values or something, Bruce. I just felt like I needed to get back to where I came from.
Did New York irritate you after a while?
It's a hard place to live.
It is.
It was for me anyway. I don't know if I could be there forever.
But while you're young.
It was expensive. It was, getting around everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So go ahead.
One of my professors was Claire Romano, fabulous printmaker. And she said, you know, you should probably think about going to grad school and maybe teaching or doing something.
Directly from college?
Yeah. Hmm. So I did. So I went to Wisconsin. She had a connection there with... Warrington Call Scott.
Sure.
There you go. Yeah.
Great printmaker.
So great printmaker. So I work with Warrington specifically.
Really?
Yeah.
But you have a degree in design there.
Yeah, and I switched. Yeah, when I was there. And then I got my MA there and then decided, well, I should probably get my MFA.
Directly? You didn't take a time off?
No. Went straight down.
And you came on
with
down.
Keith Akpol.
Keith Akpol. Yeah. Marvelous art. He's been on this program.
Yeah.
Keith has.
Great artist.
Yeah, wonderful. Nice collection of stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, Keith, I think he's out on the West Coast now.
He is, I believe.
Yeah,
I think
Oregon
in Portland
or something. Yeah, Portland. Yeah. Gosh, well, what an interesting role you've had. West Coast, East Coast, Midwest.
Yeah.
And then somehow Stamets Publishing
Corner. Then I spent 3 years teaching at a prep school, going back to my prep school roots, which I wanted.
You went back to Deerfield?
I actually taught a school outside of Pittsburgh.
Really?
Yeah, for 3 years. And then our son was born. My wife and I lived there for 3 years. And when my son was born, we said, we're going back to Iowa where we can raise this kid.
Huh, outside of Pittsburgh to Iowa.
And then I said, I've got to make some money here. I've got a family to raise. So I didn't make art for about 16, 17 years.
How could you do that?
Well, I was making it in my brain, but I wasn't making it physically. But I got into business. I got into marketing and worked for a couple of businesses before I worked for Staymates. And then finally, I've been at Staymates now for about 16 years.
How interesting.
Yeah.
I've been out of art 3 times now for a period of two years each time. And after 2 years, I started getting melancholy, and there was just like a self-definition. It's like, who are you? Who is this guy?
Yeah.
And then it just kind of pulled me back into it. I couldn't help it. It's like, what do you have to give up? What do you have to do?
It was really important for me, Bruce, to really get back into it. I felt a real need to do something with my life other than, punch a clock and get a paycheck. So I got to that point. The kids were self-reliant enough where I really didn't need to be around them all the time and carting them everywhere and, coaching soccer and doing all that sort of thing. So I really felt this need to do something for myself. And that's why I got back into it.
Huh. I found, though, that the time was not wasted, the time away, and that you were growing in life experiences and
that's
you were becoming...
Absolutely the case.
And you had this power and this strength and this knowledge to put back into your work.
Yeah.
You were a little rusty. The curveball wasn't quite there.
Yeah, and it wasn't quite there. And I started to get back in art by making boxes.
Boxes.
So that's why I did this class with your wife on doing the assemblage pieces. They were really like Cornell boxes. I started doing that again.
Sure.
So, and that was going back to my roots because my dad at one point, he was a collector and he had a Cornell box. So I remember, I remember playing with it when I was a kid.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And that memory of the box rather than a memory of a painting pulled you back in?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So, I started making boxes again. My dad actually, for a little short stint, made boxes as well. So he was doing that. So this is kind of this weird box art thing that's in our background.
Three-dimensional. Are you a maker of things rather than a painter?
I think I'm both. I'm a maker of things. I like the assemblage, but I also like the painting. But I'll tell you about my painting. I really think they're the boxes, but flat. So I think that with the boxes, that was really a layering process to build up the whatever materials I was using in the boxes, right? They became 3D, but they were physically 3D. But, when I started painting, I started to do representational work that was 3D.
Uh-huh.
But I was really working with a lot of handmade papers. That's why I work with acrylic. And so then I was layering
the 3D-ness of the paper
yeah. and then layering with the paint.
How interesting. On your website, you have it divided between spiritual paintings, animal paintings, and assemblages.
Yes.
Yeah. And my favorite of the three, although I like them all, my favorite were the assemblages.
Really?
I love them. They were intricate. They were full. They were rich. They were 3D-ish.
Sure.
I like the 3D-ish, in a sense, painting. For instance, I do oil pastels now in a printmakerly way.
Really?
And I love the thickness and the... kind of slurp of the paint, like oil paint. You can kind of thicken it up and mess it around like with a palette knife. And I love that 3D-ness, but that's all you get. You're just a little bit off the paper.
Yeah.
But your assemblages were delicious. I liked them very much. I love the spiritual paintings. I thought they were marvelous and evocative and moving. And your animal paintings, I like the way you divided them up, too, in those three.
Thanks.
Were interesting, but they were basically kind of spiritual paintings with an animal in them.
Basically,
they are,
yeah.
Yeah, and the assemblages had all of those guys all wrapped up.
Sure.
So for me, as an outside observer, just looking at your work, my picks were the assemblages. I thought they were terrific.
Interesting. I've been on this painting jag for a while, but I've had people say, why don't you go back and do some boxes?
Yeah.
So I may go back to them, and it'll be interesting. going back to work in boxes, if I do that, you know, how they'll end up being, you know, the information I've collected through the painting and sort of the vocabulary I've created through the painting, how it translates now back to the boxes.
For instance, that you had these kind of stencil-y pieces with these kind of patterns in the background, and then kind of those to me seem like backgrounds for the boxes.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, like kind of like you wrap it around or something like that. And interesting, it's like, do you use a stencil?
Yeah, I do use
you
stencil.
You do? But you cut yourself?
No, not always.
Not always?
Sometimes I do, but most of the time I just buy them at Michael's.
Really?
Like, you know, part of what I was getting into when I was doing the boxes was I went to Michael's for the first time in my life and said, oh my God, look at all this stuff. You know, this craft stuff
that you'd never use,
right? Yeah. And I was like, "What? This is like amazing." So I said, "Well, I wonder if I can make any really profound artwork from the stuff at Michael's."
No,
right? I mean, that's kind of the challenge, right? So that's what I started to do. I started to figure out if I could
stencils
put,
in the boxes.
You know, the beads on embroidery pins, and so I started doing that, and then bringing in these little mirrors from Michael's, and bringing in all this stuff from Michael's to make these boxes.
Yeah, is that the way you advance, by using other materials?
I'm kind of a materials guy. I think that I kind of think through how I use the materials, and the materials then help me. I think about where I want to be with my work. It's always spiritually based, and it's always that's the theme of all my work, because my religion, art is my religion. So bringing those materials in becomes then part of the whole ritual and using that. And
art is your religion.
I feel that. Yeah.
Huh? You meditate through making art?
Well, I tell you what, I go to a really good place, not all the time when I'm making artwork, but I go there a lot often.
It's wonderful. Art zone.
It's the zone.
Does time cease?
Yeah.
All your aches and pains go away?
Yeah.
How long can you stay there?
Hours sometimes, and sometimes not very long at all.
Huh.
Yeah. And it's funny because I really, you know, I'm a businessman on one end and very much left brain, and then I go into this right brain space when I'm making my artwork, and it's cathartic for both. So, you know, it's really interesting because I'll be in a really boring business meeting, and I shouldn't be saying this on the air, but I will, and I'll actually be making a painting in my brain.
Because
you know, I'm stuck in this meeting, and I just am bored.
Can't you doodle or anything?
Well, I could, but I don't. I generally,
oh, they
I'm
see
just,
you.
Yeah. So I'm just generally forming this in my head, and then when I'm in the studio, on occasion, I will be solving business problems, you know, while I'm painting. So it really helps me kind of work through those issues I'm having in business.
The creative approach to business.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found in my time that I was not making art. I never quite made paintings in my head. I didn't quite think that way.
Yeah.
For me, it's in the making of them. I work it out that way. But I found that everything I did as an artist.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it?
It is that you drive, you cook, you eat, you embrace, you read, you talk, you think, you handle problems, you solve situations as an artist. I mean, you don't, it's not a directly A to B. It might be so through some circuitous route that goes through there, or you might have some idea about how to do something in a different way.
Yeah, I think that the problem solving, I think it's all problem solving in a way.
Right.
You know, and the problem solving, it is sort of that intuitive way of doing it. It's not completely an analytical approach. It's somewhere coming from somewhere else.
That probably makes you a good businessman then.
I think it does, actually.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The intuitive approach to it.
I think
business.
So.
You're not a logical, reasoning person?
A little bit, but not really.
There's a place for that.
Yeah, and I think trying to understand things from someone else's point of view. I think artists do that a lot. I think that's helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, some empathy.
Empathy, exactly right. Yeah. Well, very interesting. Bill Stamates is with us. He's the Vice President of Business Development of the business side from Stamates Communication Marketing. He and his wife have Black Earth Gallery in Cedar Rapids in the New Bohemia Arts District, Nouveau.
Yeah, Nouveau for short.
Nouveau Arts District in Cedar Rapids in the Cherry Building on the second floor. You have worked there.
Yes.
And he has a show going up right now at the Maquoketa Art Experience until the end of the month, until July 30th, open 12 to 5 every day. Let's take a short break, and we'll be right back after this gallery guide.
on exhibit around the WVIK listening area at the Cattage Gallery in the Galvin Fine Arts Center on the St. Ambrose University campus in Davenport through September 5th, the 10th annual Cattage Exhibition. This year's theme, Home. Hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. At the Figge Art Museum at 225 West 2nd Street in Davenport through August 3rd, a movable museum, works from the UIMA School Programs Collections. Through September 7th, Innovators and Legends, Generations in Textiles and Fiber. Through September 7th, Local Threads. Through September 14th, From Pencil to Printed Page, Arthur Geisert's Thunderstorm. And through April of 2015, A Legacy for Iowa. Hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Thursday. At Midcoast at Center Station on River Drive in Moline through the end of July, Acrylics by Susan Moore. Hours are 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 on Saturday, 9 to 5 Sunday. At Midcoast Gallery West on 2nd Avenue in Rock Island through the end of August, photography by Heidi Brandt and acrylics by Leanne Westcott. Hours are 11:30 to 5:30 Wednesday through Saturday. At Quad City Arts at the Airport in the Moline International Airport through August 30th, paintings by Roy Kasich and wood carvings by Bill Wolford. At the Quad City Botanical Center at 2525 4th Avenue in Rock Island through the end of July, Flamingo Follies, Monday through Saturday from 10 to 5, Sunday noon to 5. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
Back on Art Talks, Bill Stamets is with us. He's got a show at the Maquoket Art Experience, marvelous stuff, until July 30th. You're an assemblage artist, you're a painter, undergrad at Pratt, MA at Madison, Wisconsin, and MFA in printmaking from Iowa. Very cool, very cool. So, Bill, how let's talk about how you make things, how you work, how it works for you.
Sure.
Over the years, I know you kind of get certain patterns. I call it generating an image, the way I generate an image. And you kind of get it out there, and then you kind of get the first draft, and then you rewrite, and you have to redo it.
Mm-hmm.
Many years ago, when I was in Bloomington, Indiana, one of my teachers, who also had come up from Iowa, Marvin Lowe, he was like poo-pooing me for arriving at a conclusion so quickly. It's like, this picture is finished, it's still wet. What are you doing? You got to really rework it. You got to like scrape it out and put it on.
I
didn't either, but it's like for him, making a picture involved maybe more suffering or maybe more another layer on top or something.
The opposite of that is I've had students who've suffered and labored on a work of art and it's still not very good.
True. True.
So you can go the other way too.
Yeah.
I think if a work of art's a work of art, a good work of art, it just is. You know, I don't think that Picasso spent a lot of time working on, say, one of his famous assemblage pieces, the handlebar and the and the seat, and it came together quickly, and it's a wonderful piece. It's profound.
It is. Yeah. So you think of art as a making of things just right then, and you don't go back and rework it.
I actually do.
Do you?
Yeah. And it's always a making of something. There's always some sort of process involved, and not all artworks aren't always successful.
Huh.
They don't just quite make it. You know, I have a work and I have B work. I don't have any C, D, or E or F work. You know, it just, it doesn't exist for me.
You don't throw it
out. But a lot of the B work, I'll sit and look at on a wall for even a couple of years. And then I'll go and I'll find a solution to the problem. And
I do too, yes.
Right, go back and rework it and then
voila. Leave it on the wall.
Yeah, it's better.
So how do you work? What is your process?
Oftentimes, people ask me about the titles of my pieces.
And you have great titles, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I loved your titles. They're interesting. It's like, who are they about?
Yeah. Oftentimes, I will come up with the title first, and oftentimes the titles are based on someone I know. So I have
titles
where I often work with the titles first. I have a book by my on my bedside table, and I write down interesting phrases that I hear or things that pop in my head. Interesting things my wife says, which is quite often, and I'll jot those down and I'll weave those into being the title for a painting.
Huh? You're a collector of quotes.
Yeah. Interesting phrases, and we'll make those work.
And then that generates the painting.
It often comes from that. Yeah, and then I'll work in batches and series. So I'll think about it and I'll kind of go on a jag. So right now I'm painting a lot of chandeliers and thinking
about light
and doing that sort of thing.
They're
sort of this beacon in the night. They're sort of like a light that has a spiritual sense for me, but they're also very ornate and have a lot of social implications. So that's why I started doing them. So there's kind of layered meanings there.
Anyone in particular?
Mostly just sort of society in general, you know, kind of thing on those. I did a piece that was at the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art purchased that was a big octopus. And the title was Her Long Arms Could Reach Them All. And that's based on someone I know. And she actually, octopi, I guess, are actually very nurturing mothers. They actually take care of their young quite well, which people don't realize. So my whole point with that painting was that this octopus was reaching out to take care of her young, but other people will bring into it, of course, a sort of a menacing interpretation to the piece.
Sure, 20,000 leagues
right,
under the
exactly.
sea.
Yeah, but you could go either way with it. You know.
Which is one of the things about art, you can interpret it differently.
Right.
So you're like a singer-songwriter who's got the words first and then you plug in the music.
Yeah, often. So I did an assemblage piece called She Collected Small Debts. So that was a little bird, and then there is this pile of little glass stones in the piece, in the box. And that's about a relative I know who would do favors for you, but was at the same time, you know, keeping a tab of those favors and then would collect on those small debts.
Relationships, people, things you observe. Yeah. You're like an observer of humanity, recording societal and personal, social mannerisms.
Yep.
Kind of a southern.
Sure. And they kind of come into the work. And it depends on where I am with things. So I've got a piece, His Trophy, which is about, you know, big game hunter. And it's a big Impala horns. And so it's about, you know, taking something beautiful from nature and deciding to kill it and then putting the horns on the wall. Which I have issues with. Big game.
Fox hunting. You're probably not a good big fox hunting fan.
Not a big fan. Nor am I.
Yeah. What a horrible occupation.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you, even though you went to a prep school and went to some of the finest schools in the country, you still have issue with status and elitism? And
I do. You know, and I grew up that way, but I still kind of, I think a lot of it seems a little, for me, I kind of go, wow, really? You know, I'm not a country club guy or anything like that. In a lot of ways, I sort of eschew it. I mean, that's just kind of where I come from. I don't know why. I just do. I just don't.
Are you rebelling against your upbringing?
I think maybe I am. Maybe I'm. Yeah.
In a mild kind of way.
In a mild kind of way. Yeah.
Because you're not throwing rocks through any windows or anything.
Right.
you're taking. Well, I mean, even something like fashion, you know, can destroy the people who are mostly interested in it. So everything has its other side of it too.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, how do you work then? Do you sketch it out? Do you have a thumbnail?
Generally, I sketch it out. Yeah.
On the canvas. On the board?
And I generally work on masonite. I like a hard surface.
I do too. Do you gesso a lot?
Yeah, I'll gesso it and then work on that surface and draw it out.
How big?
I like working larger. I work any size. Actually, I work from 6 by 6 inches all the way up to 48 by 36. I tend to like 36 by 36 or 48 by 36 inches, bigger.
Square?
Square I like a lot.
Really?
Yeah. But I like big. I tend to work better big, I think.
Gestural?
Gestural, yeah. sketch it out, and then begin to apply paint and sort of build up the image. I generally draw it, being a printmaker, in a sepia or black, you know, draw when I'm...
Brush,
you know. Yeah, draw with paint and start that way. And then I'll put the colors on, and then I'll start to collage on top. So I use a lot of handmade papers and collage on top. This is for my paintings.
How do you adhere it?
I use an archival glue, a bookbinder's glue.
Which one?
Oh, my gosh. Now you're asking me.
Yes, glue?
Yeah, I get it from Dick Blick.
Sure.
I can't remember the name of it, but I get it in the bookbinder section.
But
I like it because it's going to be a neutral pH, and I know that it's going to keep the paper as pristine as possible.
And then on top of that, you paint again?
Yeah, I absolutely paint again. And so I use acrylic because I can't use oil with the paper. And I really view the paper as being another layer of paint. So I will build up paint, then paper, then paint, then paper, and build up different layers of it depending on how I would think the image is coming through.
Why so many layers? Why?
I like the depth that it actually creates. There's a lot of depth in the paintings, I feel. And so...
quarter of an inch, half inch?
Maybe not quite that much, but build up pretty well, yeah. And then I generally work with a matte medium so I can see things better. But then as I get closer to being finished, I start to use more of a gloss.
You have a gloss at the end?
Yeah, and then I use a lot of gloss, and then I varnish it about 5 times.
Why? Why do you want it so shiny?
I found when I was really varnishing, and I call it super varnishing, that the color, the subtle colors were coming out more, and I was getting more intense color from that.
Going through,
bouncing off the white surface, the gesso surface is coming back out, yeah.
And the varnish would bring that out?
Yeah, it was really heavy. It was weird because I couldn't get the luminosity that you get in oil paint, but I discovered through this super varnishing that I was really getting much more of that.
How interesting.
Yeah.
How interesting. How many layers of varnish?
5.
5?
Yeah.
Wow, it takes a long time to do that.
No, not with acrylic. It takes, because it's acrylic.
Oh, right, it just dries. Yeah. Interesting. Do you go backwards and forwards in one way and the other way?
Yeah, I do, and I actually work back, because I'm a printmaker, so, you know, we're used to scraping plates and doing that sort of thing. So I work back into the paintings. I actually sometimes will just use a power sander and go in and just sand it back.
Really?
Yeah. And then get really interesting things happening with that.
Huh.
And then work back
you
up.
Don't use a, you don't use a
no,
scraper?
No, it's like Mark Bradford, you know, he does these wonderful paintings. He's an L.A. artist and does these wonderful grid-like paintings of L.A., street scenes like bird's eye view.
Mm-hmm.
He'll go back with a power sander too. I discovered that he does that as well, and really just sands them like crazy.
Golly, I did that once on a plate. I power sanded a plate, and it was kind of fun to do. You know, little things going everywhere. But a painting, gosh, that I don't know. Maybe it's more precious or something to me. I'm going to hold it. So very interesting. What kind of brushes, paint do you use?
I use Liquitex mainly. I sometimes will use something like a basic. There's this basic color. It's like a pink color. It's almost like a Pepto-Bismol pink. And for some reason, I'm really attracted to it. And I actually mix it with a lot of my paints and use it a lot. It's giving it just really interesting colors that are coming from it. But it's really not a great paint at all. But
Basics is like it's a student grade.
Yeah, it's student grade.
But if you beef it up with everything else, it's probably going to last, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of brushes?
Nothing fancy. You know, I really use student
bristle?
Grade. Yeah, bristle. Yeah, I use a lot of chisel brushes.
Really?
Yeah.
You throw them away or are you?
You know, I tend to wear them out.
Really?
I wear them down, yeah.
Wow.
Well, it's so my printmaking background where I'm really hard on, you know, brushes.
You're working with metal and you're working in metal
I kind of
attack. You press hard.
Yeah.
It's funny how that printmaking mentality has just crept into everything.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, it's like I don't look for the quick fix. It's like, well, I'm going to draw this out and then I'm going to stick it in the acid and I'm going to take it out and clean it up and put another layer and
Right. It's the printmaking brought to me the whole issue of process and structure. That's what it did for me. And so I'm able to really think through process and structure when I'm doing my artwork. That's the profound part of it.
Yes.
I really could care less about making reproductions of something.
Me too. It's like 5. It's like barely. Maybe 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you spend all day just kind of additioning a print. It just was so...
Yeah. No, really dull.
Yeah, dull. Yeah. Someone else could do it. Yeah. Although it's nice to have them around.
That is true.
That is true.
My wife would like me to make more.
Make more.
Things.
Well,
she can sell more then.
There we go. What I would do is I would like spend one day, like I go in on a Saturday or something, and just make prints all day. Just go in and just kind of mow the lawn and trim the hedges and just make prints all day. You know, just kind of do that, and then you got them, and you know you paste them up on the wall and you're good.
Sure.
It's a nice feeling, and you know, put some music, take some food along with you, just make a day of it.
But
that's the only way I could do it. Otherwise, it's just
laborious.
But some people like doing that kind of stuff. Did you ever print for Lisansky?
Never printed for him. I was the TA down there.
Were you?
Worked with Virginia.
Virginia. Keith. Yeah. She's a doll. I love
She's
Virginia.
Wonderful.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah.
She did that wonderful foil thing.
The foil stamper.
Yeah.
She was great with that.
She was.
And Keith was wonderful to work with.
Uh-huh.
The only thing I probably didn't like a whole lot was making that black ink.
I did that,
I liked
too.
The result.
I did that, too. The ink was fabulous. Yeah. You know what? I remember that little room back there.
Uh-huh.
You've got this kind of this grinder, and you'd be adding more oil and more oil.
Yeah.
And it all day. And then I was there the minute that the oil, the dry, turned into bloop.
Yes.
It turned into a ink.
Yeah.
And that was the best ink I ever used.
It's the best around. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was just great. Frankfurt and Vine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you couldn't beat it. It was like a street in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that little ball of black ink.
That's right.
It was just like, it's like fabulous stuff. Golly, I'd like to go back and get some of that ink.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that would be nice. Do you have a press? Do you still print?
No, I don't have a press.
Huh? Do you have access to one?
I probably could if I tried really hard. Probably go over to Coe College and do that.
Yeah. Yeah, but you don't print anymore.
No, no. And I you know, my time's limited too, so that's part of the problem.
Printmaking is like such a long process.
It's a long process.
It's like writing a novel rather than, because you have to. It just takes so long. You have to plan it out.
You have to work it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Speaking with Bill Stamets he's got an art show at Maquoketa Art Experience until the end of the month. Very interesting. So you use regular brushes, nothing fancy, bristle brushes.
Yep.
You take pretty good care of them, but you wear them down.
Mm-hmm.
You use Liquitex paint. Do you ever use Golden?
No, I should probably try some Golden. I have another artist who's been using Golden and getting some good results from it. Yeah.
And no oil because it would hurt the paper, and you have layers on your thing. Do you know what you're going to be doing with all of the different layers, or do you?
I have a general idea.
General idea, but you don't have the finished product in mind.
No, I don't.
Hmm.
So, but then I bring into it things that from my vocabulary that I borrow from all the time that's in my head. So circles are part of my vocabulary of devices I'm using in my paintings. I use a house shape sometimes as a device in my paintings. I'll bring in certain stencils and use those depending on how the piece is going, where I feel it's going. Don't always use them, but they're always there to kind of grab and use when I think it's important. That helps you make my point better.
Hmm. You know, I think all artists have those forms that they like. Me, it'd be checkerboards going back, you know, arches.
Sure.
I like that kind of trees, landscapes.
Yeah.
Those kind of forms for me. And I've known other artists who, they say that every year they maybe add another form.
Sure, and it could be just a mark. It could be just a splatter. It could be something like that, something like that.
Huh. Do these forms mean something to you? Does this house mean something?
Not on by themselves. The house does. Yeah, that's sort of a domestic thing. Domestic harmony.
Yeah.
So that sort of thing. But other than that, not really. The circle is a spiritual device, I think.
Huh? Triangles?
Don't use triangles. Don't like triangles.
No.
No. For me, no.
Too sharp.
Yeah.
You like it rounder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Rectangles, squares. You like squares.
I like squares.
Interesting. I've never really taken to drawing on a square. It just I keep looking for like the edge.
Really?
I think it's because I'm thinking landscape.
Yeah, well, you know, Warhol loved the square because he didn't have to think then. That's what he always said,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he was always saying stuff like this. I didn't believe it at all. It's like, oh, I'm bored. It gives me something to do.
Right.
Not really.
No.
Come on, you were cooking. Well, let's take another break. Bill Stamets is with us again. The show at the McCulloch Art Experience until the end of the month, and let's pause now, and we'll be right back after this gallery guide.
On exhibit around the WVIK listening area, on continuing exhibit at the Rene Gray Gallery at 101 South Cody Road in LeClaire, Scored and Surfaced, works in various media by 9 artists. Hours are 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day except Sunday. At Roz Talks at 2108 3rd Avenue in Rock Island, on continuing exhibit, Object Permanence, works by 20 local artists. Hours are 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. on Sunday. At the German-American Heritage Center on West 2nd Street in Davenport through July 20th, 100 Years, 100 Stories, celebrating the Quad City Symphony Orchestra's Century of Excellence. Through July 28th, The World of Berta Hummel. Hours are 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday, noon to 4 on Sunday. At the Galesburg Civic Arts Center on East Main Street in Galesburg through August 2nd, works by Michael Acera and Walter Arnold. Through July 24th, works by Yvonne Hamm. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10:30 to 4:30, Saturday from 10:30 to 3. At the Muscatine Art Center at 1314 Mulberry Avenue in Muscatine, through the end of August, wood carvings by Norman Bunn. Through January 25th, Railroads of Muscatine County. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Thursday evening 7 to 9, Saturdays and Sundays from 1 to 5. At the Dubuque Museum of Art at 701 Locust Street in Dubuque through July 13th, Marcia Wegman, Midwest Landscapes. Through August 3rd, from the permanent collection, Ilse Silteman's Holzer. Through September 1st, Edward S. Curtis and Thomas Moran. The Grant Wood Galleries on continuing exhibit. Hours of Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursdays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturdays and Sundays, 1 to 4. At the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art at 410 3rd Avenue in Cedar Rapids, through September 7th, Carl Van Vechten, photographer to the stars, through November 2nd, Marvin Cohn on my mind, the ceramics of Dean Schwartz. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
Back on Art Talks, Bill Stamets is with us. This program and many, many previous programs going back about 2 years are available on our website, wvik.org. Click on the schedule button at the top of the page and stroll on down to Art Talks on Thursday nights at 7 and click on that, and they will appear, the date, the name of the artist, and a brief description of what they do. And we'll probably call you an assemblage painter or a what should we call you?
Just an artist.
Just an artist, yes. Yeah, okay. That's not quite enough. I need something more.
Okay, all right.
Painter?
A painter.
Painter, printmaker?
A printmaker's painter.
Printmaker's painter.
How about that?
Printmaker's painter. Painter's mark. Printmaker's painter. Yeah. Well, we'll think about that.
Okay.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back on Earth, Black Earth Gallery. Your wife has this lovely gallery in the New Bohemia Arts District in downtown in Cedar Rapids.
Nubo, she does, yes.
On the Cherry Building, second floor. So is this the way you survive, making a living? I mean,
No, absolutely not.
You couldn't?
No, could not.
Okay.
But we really feel, my wife in particular feels it's very important to showcase emerging artists and underrepresented artists. So she's making a point. She's making a point of taking that talent we have in Iowa and showing these artists. So she gets a lot of people coming by and showing their stuff, and she's discriminating. She doesn't take everyone, but she will take a look and she'll say, okay, this is what's good and what might sell and what we could might be able to move, and here's what she might want to work on. And so she is really wants to do more juried shows so that she can begin to get the some really good talent and get some guest people to jury the shows for her. So she's really going to go down that avenue. She feels it's a good way to get people exposed to really good artists.
Sure. Is there a good market in Cedar Rapids?
There's a fair market in Cedar Rapids. It's okay. And actually what's interesting is we're getting a lot of people to the New Bow Arts District from out of town. And so we get a lot of people from out of town who are visiting the gallery.
Let's go to Iowa where the prices are cheaper and the artists are just as good. Oh, interesting. She's an artist of being a gallerist?
She's an artist. She's not making artwork herself right now, but as a gallerist, she's certainly an artist. And the way she's hanging the shows and the way she's getting people into the gallery, she's very involved in the new Bohemia Arts District. She's putting on the New Bow Arts Fest, which is on Labor Day weekend. And we'll have a ton of bands and artists selling their wares and everything like that. So she's very involved in that.
One of the hardest things for any artist, especially starting off or even working their way up, is to price their work.
Yes.
And the gallery is going to take anywhere from a third to a half. How do you deal with that?
You know, that's always been a conundrum of how you price your work,
right?
And what you feel the value of your work is, and certainly I've spent more time on a little tiny painting than I have sometimes even a larger painting, but I then price the tiny paintings at a much smaller price than the larger piece. Why? I really don't know why.
Size, and we
tend to price our work at the gallery by the square inch. And I don't know if it makes sense or not, but it is sort of a metric to use. And oftentimes the viewing public doesn't know any other way. In their brains, they sort of say, yeah, okay, it's fine. It's larger, so therefore, yeah, it must be worth more. It's not fair. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but that's the only thing we've come up with that we think works okay in selling to the buying public.
It's like flooring.
It's kind of like flooring. It is. And so you take someone who's put their heart and soul into a work of art, and now we've decided to price it this way. I'm not saying it's the best way, Bruce, but it's just the way we tend to do it.
How do you price your work?
That way? Actually, my wife prices my work.
Okay, well, lucky. Okay, you don't give yourself, like, say, $25 an hour or $10 an hour?
You know, I actually look more at the market and what I think the market will bear. And then go on that premise.
Okay, so you don't do hourly wage or anything like that?
No.
You don't even think about that?
No, I really don't.
Because for some of your stuff, you're probably getting, what, $10 an hour, $5 an hour?
Probably something like that, yeah.
That doesn't...
Yeah. You know, we're not in a market where that's going to be able to support much more than that. Hmm. So I'm trying to sell more. I've had a couple of shows up in Minneapolis, so I can price my work a little bit higher up there.
You pursue galleries? You talk to them?
Yeah.
Your wife
absolutely.
Does? What do you do? You kind of scope out galleries first?
We sort of scope out an area. We took a trip for spring break with our kids down to New Orleans. We checked out New Orleans, which it has an interesting art market. It's both very high and then really low. There's very little in between, we found down there. So very high end around, of course, the Warehouse District is a big arts area down there. And then much lower type of artwork being created in the Bywater area and that part.
Is this high art, low art? Is this
kind of
serious folk?
I just think new artists, emerging artists trying to make a mark in the low end, and then really very good, very accomplished art on the high end. We're up in Minneapolis quite a bit. I know some people up there. Try to work some of the galleries up there. Flow Art Space in St. Paul, and then Anne's got a contact, my wife, in a couple of galleries, White Paper Gallery, and there's another one I can't think of off the top of my head.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting life that you're living. I mean, you're an arts activist in your community. You're on boards and the Visual Arts Commission in Cedar Rapids. You're doing that. So you're it's not that you're a corporate man, but you're an organizational man. You're organized and you can administer things like that. And you can get into that mindset. Is this a different part of your brain?
It's a different part of my brain.
You don't mind going back and forth?
No, it's really interesting because I'm fairly recent to the art a commission, visual arts commission for the city. And so I go from being in business to being in art and dealing with artists and the gallery to being with city government. And so that's a whole different kettle of fish right there, and how they think and the way their brains work. And
how do they think?
They really have the best interest of the city at heart, but there's a lot of red tape and a lot of regulation and a lot of hoops to jump through to get things done.
And politics, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I kind of take this existential approach to it. Like, I just go, you know, outside and look in and go, wow, this is fascinating. This is how government works. Okay, yeah, here we go. I don't get frustrated with it. I just say, okay, this is just the way it is.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of like Christo dealing with all of the bureaucracy to get his pieces up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. But they want to facilitate this. They want to.
They do. There's 2% for any new buildings project.
2%.
2%.
Oh, that's great.
Right. Of the city's budget.
Oh.
And they
okay.
make that clear. It's not of the whole budget.
Okay.
So it depends on how their funding's coming in.
Huh. And that goes to projects. And are you having public sculptures? Are you
yes.
having parks? Are you having?
Yeah. So the Visual Arts Commission then is the purchasing arm, and they determine what pieces will go in.
And what kind of things are you doing?
Well, a lot. When the city flooded in 2008, there was a lot of new building that occurred
mm-hmm.
and new pieces that were going up.
Hmm.
And now we have a centrally located park called Green Square, which is going to now get a new piece of artwork because it's being completely renovated.
Are you having a commission or a committee, or are you having a contest?
We'll have a contest. It'll be a jury contest.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Oh, good for you. Good for you. I hope you succeed wildly. I hope
Thanks.
It's just marvelous. Are you going to have Maya Lin design something for you?
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah that would be. Huh, you could bring her in. Well, very. This is an interesting life for you. You're busy. You're active.
Yes.
You're painting. Do you find that you think about your work while you're doing other things, so that the few hours a day that you have to spend are intense?
Yes, and I will admit that. I do think about my paintings, especially when I have a boring moment, particularly in a really dull business meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be making a painting in my head.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Do you remember it? Do you
I remember the basics of it. You know,
are you
I'm thinking
drawing,
of the
like
title. I've got it there, and then
on
I start
an iPad?
To. Mm-hmm.
Gosh, what a great mind you have to be able to do that. I
so
couldn't do that.
Fun. Yeah.
Huh, you can construct things in your head too?
Kind of. I kind of know the general direction where it will go. And oftentimes those pieces are pretty successful because I've already had it kind of laid out in my brain.
Uh-huh. You know? You're organizing them in the back of your mind.
And the funny thing is, Bruce, then when I'm painting, I will often think about business. I will often solve business problems when I'm working
that's
on it.
That's the other part of your brain
it's
that's
cathartic.
So free. It's like when you're on the phone, you're doodling, and that part of your brain is... can wander because another part of your brain is occupied.
Yeah.
How interesting. I have a guest who's been on the show who's a lawyer, and he's also a really wonderful poet. And I asked him if his lawyering had affected his poetry, and he said, no, not really, but the poetry had affected the lawyering.
Interesting.
And that he could put new combinations of things together that the others couldn't, and so they would send him all the hard cases because
really?
He was able to combine, you know,
the
bicycle handles and the bicycle seat to make some obvious thing. And that's probably happening with you, too. What an interesting combination. Wow. Bill Stamets, are you involved with the history of your family? Are you involved with the collection or the...
Well, I'm involved with the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art, which has a lot of Grant Wood pieces in it.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
It does.
And Marvin Cohn pieces.
Marvin
so,
Cohn, too.
And my grandparents were friends with Grant Wood. So Grant Wood did a piece for my grandparents called Over Mantelpiece.
Mm-hmm. And also a portrait of Sally? Oh,
yeah, that's my aunt, Aunt Sally.
That's your aunt?
Yeah.
Gosh, how cool to have Grant Wood portrait of your aunt as a little girl.
Yeah.
Where is that now?
Both of those pieces are at the Cedar Rapids Museum.
Oh, they donated them to the museum.
Yeah, the family, we decided we should donate those pieces so other people can enjoy them. Yeah.
That's great. I know every week Dave mentions and at the Cedar Rapids Art Museum that nice collection of Grant Wood stuff. Also, Lisansky's up there, too. They have a nice Lisansky collection
up
there.
Yeah, it's a great collection of the same
species. It is interesting. Yeah. Bill, what is happening in the arts community now? What is happening with arts? I mean,
globally or locally?
The recession is kind of lifting. People are starting to build houses.
People are starting to buy a little bit. I think what we're seeing is mostly small pieces selling as opposed to larger pieces.
Uh-huh.
Most of the artists that I know tend to move their smaller pieces. They're working smaller for that reason.
Mm-hmm. What prices are they selling them at?
I think anywhere between 50 to, you know, to 1,000, 2,000. The good artists are getting higher prices for their pieces.
Huh.
Yeah.
But that's the range of them, from $50 to $2,000?
Yeah. And then there's some really good artists who are getting much more for their pieces. Like Stan Wiederspan, great painter in Cedar Rapids. He gets about $10,000 for his they're cardboard boxes, but there's hyper-realism, and they're really good. He actually also shows at O.K. Harris Gallery in New York City.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's really good stuff.
Huh. So you can make a living in Iowa selling your work.
Yes, I think some. Yes, a few people can. Yes.
A few people can.
Yeah.
What else is happening in art that you've noticed?
Well, you know, there's been a flattening of the art world because of the internet. That's certainly true to some degree. But I still think there are places that people go to get a leg up in the world of art and to make a living. And so New York is still the place to go. Certainly London, Basel. I mean, there are certain places where people are going to be known for making art that still exists to a large degree.
Hmm.
But you can get your name out there fairly quickly, you know, through a Saatchi online or whatever the case may be, to get your at least some recognition out there. The young artists that I know are all over Instagram right now, using Instagram quite a bit. Some are using Pinterest. So you see that happening quite a bit. It's just a good way to sort of begin to do your social media marketing and get your word about your artwork out there.
So you can't just take slides and get them in a gallery and hope for the best?
No, it doesn't work that way.
You have a website?
I have a website. I'm active on Twitter. I'm really active on Facebook. I should probably be doing a lot more with LinkedIn and Instagram, and I'm just kind of learning both of those.
Huh. And that will make you a better artist?
No, it'll make me a better marketer for art.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Can you actually see the real piece online? I mean, it's an image. It's not quite as like being there.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's not quite the same. That's the way things are happening.
Huh.
So I know we have one young artist who really relies a lot on Instagram, and he is really connected with artists all over the world through Instagram.
What's his name?
Royal.
Royal
Jarman.
Royal Jarman.
Yeah.
Don't know. Interesting. Well, we've reached the end of our delicious hour. Thank you very much for making the trip all the way down here. It's just a delight having you on.
My pleasure.
And best of luck with your work and your work and your artwork and your activist work. Time for the last question. What advice do you, Bill Stamets, have for young artists? What can you tell them?
They should pursue art as best they can and fulfill that side of their being as much as they can. Have no regrets.
What do you mean?
Don't go down a path and become an accountant if you really are an artist and feel the need to make art. Don't go down a path and become a barista at Starbucks if you really feel you need to be an artist. Be an artist. Put art first, and then whatever you do, whatever means you can do to be an artist, be that.
Excellent. Good advice. Very, very good. Well, that's it for us today on Art Talks. Many thanks to our guests. Many thanks to our audio engineer, that maestro of sound, Dave Garner. As always, I'm Bruce Carter. Until next week, have a great night and a fine tomorrow. See you soon, Laura.
Support for Art Talks comes from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com.